Welcome. You're listening to a members-only broadcast brought to you by Barnabas Foundation, your trusted ministry partner for planned giving. And here's your host, Kurt Knoll, Director of Member Relations.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us. My name is Kurt Knoll, the Director of Member Relations here at Barnabas Foundation, and I'm so glad you're with us today. Joining me today is Amy Beatty, one of our estate planning directors who many of you know quite well for many years that she's either come on broadcast like this or been at our conference or you've met her over time. And also today is Lindsay Cannon, who's relatively new to the organization and another one of our estate planning directors. And because you're relatively new, Lindsay, I just thought we'd give you a moment here just to introduce yourself to those that are watching today.
Oh, well, thank you, Kurt. Welcome, everyone. So my name is Lindsay Cannon. I am a practicing attorney. I've been practicing in West Michigan for the last 11 years and had the privilege of joining Barnabas Foundation in March of this year and had the opportunity to join the planning team and really look forward to working with all of our members and donors in the years to come.
Thanks, Lindy. Appreciate it. And we're so glad you're with us as well. And Lindsay and Amy, thanks for joining me today for today's topic, Women and Wealth, where we're going to talk a bit about the fears, hopes, and dreams that women share when it comes to planning and charitable giving, especially in the face-to-face meetings that you all have had with them over many years working here at Barnabas Foundation. A reminder to everybody watching today, if you have a question, feel free to put it in the Q&A portion, the Q&A portion specifically here on the Zoom session at the bottom of your screen. Some people in the past have used the chat portion that doesn't quite pop up as well here on the screen, but we'll address your questions as we can throughout the broadcast. And as always, this session is being recorded. And so if there are other members within your organization that you'd like to share the information with, a recording of this will be available in our member center, usually within about 48 hours or so, by Monday for sure. And then it'll also be shared with you a link to it in next month's monthly update newsletter. So look for it there as well. So today's topic, women and wealth. Thank you again, ladies, for joining me. Why is it important that we turn our focus to charitable planning to women?
So Kurt, I'll start, you know, because that is such a great question. And I think the way that we best understand this is by starting with the background facts and really kind of taking a look at a snapshot of what is going on in our country as it pertains to women and wealth. So what we know is that there was a McKinsey & Company study that was done. What this study says is that right now in our country, women are controlling approximately $14 trillion in financial assets, which is a significant amount of wealth. But what this study also taught us is that by the year of 2030, women are actually projected to be in control of approximately $30 trillion in financial assets. Now, these financial assets are really going to comprise a number of different things. This can be business assets, so businesses or family businesses that are getting passed on to women. It can also be retirement assets. So assets that are inherited by these women through beneficiary designation or even retirement assets that they have earned and saved and contributed towards themselves. And then also family wealth. So this could be legacy wealth, family wealth that is passed on and inherited by these women. But really looking at 2030, knowing that the face of wealth is going to change and that women are going to be key players. What we also need to understand about sort of these background facts is that the Census Bureau also came out and said that the average age of widowhood in our country is 59 years. So we would think that number would be higher, but it's not. 59 years is the age of widowhood. And we also know that women, on average, are outliving their spouses between 15 to 30 years. So what does that tell us? It means not only are women going to control a significant amount of wealth, but they're going to be holding on to that wealth for a really long time, for approximately 15 to 30 years. And then lastly, I want to just take a look at this snapshot, specifically who these women are. Who are these women players that are going to be controlling this wealth? And what we have found, the Indiana University Women's Philanthropy Institute took a look at this, and they identified that these women are falling into the pre-boomer and boomer generations. So that is going to be women born between the ages of 1928 to 1964.
That's me, 1963.
I wasn't going to say it easy. So we're looking at the pre-boomer and the boomer generation. So again, these women born between 1928 to 1964, they are going to be the ones controlling this wealth. And when we look at those generations, what are the characteristics we find? Well, first of all, these women are extremely educated, much more so than prior generations. So these women have graduated high school, they're getting college degrees, they're going on to postgraduate studies and getting their doctorates, and very, very educated, much more so than any prior generation. These women are also participating in the workforce much more than prior generations of women. So they're holding jobs, they're holding high level jobs in the workforce, meaning that their earning power is significantly more than prior generations. So we have extremely educated, high earning women in these generations who by 2030 are going to be in control of significant amounts of wealth in this country.
You know, Kurt, you will remember when you and I both came to Barnabas, and we came in about the same time. Our director at the time was Henry Dorn, but just prior to Henry, our director was Dave Vanderploeg. And Dave was an attorney that had left private practice just like I did and just like Lindsay did. And I was leading a breakout on women and wealth at our annual conference 15 years ago. And Dave pulled me aside and said, one of the points that you need to make during this breakout to our members, you need to stress the importance of the fact that when they're working with a donor couple and one of those husband and wife, one passes away, they have an entirely new donor. And that's really the focus here. We have women who are significant players, but our members need to understand that while you may have been going into the homes of these donors as husbands and wives for all these years, when you have just the wife, that's a whole new donor. And so you need to remember to treat that donor perhaps a little differently. You maybe have to change it up a little bit. And we'll talk about that.
Absolutely. And we've been talking about this for quite a few years. I recall from our conferences in the past, we've had various different topics on this. But recently, we've also done this, what we call P for POM. Internally, the planning for peace of mind. And that's really been driven, Amy, by you and a colleague there in West Michigan, Andrea Carson, has been driving force of bringing that seminar out to really empower women. Can you just touch on that briefly, Amy?
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I love planning for peace of mind. That's our new program. Planning for peace of mind, really, we bring women who are basically 55 years and older together, women who are widowed, women who are single, women who are still married, women who are divorced. We bring these women together and we help them understand both their finances and their estate planning, because women really need to get their arms around both of those areas so that they can feel comfortable in both their charitable giving and their legacy giving. In order for them to be able to move forward in both their areas, in both of those areas, they need to feel comfortable. So if we bring women together and they're able to just raise their hands and get their questions answered and kind of find us in a, as a port in a storm. We just find that to be a really wonderful thing. And it, the program has just been just really a blessing, I think, for so many women.
Well, I know from just hearing the reports afterwards, because quite honestly, they don't invite any of us guys from the office to attend. but every time we do this, it's always been very well attended. And it's led to some absolutely awesome conversations with people, both, as you mentioned, singles, widowed individuals, people that are still married or divorced or so forth. And it's just been a blessing to be able to serve in that way. And we are working on ways in which we can scale that up and figure out how do we bring that to a more national audience rather than just doing into localized kind of facilities. And we'll continue to work on that. So look for more details on that at some point in the future. I can't give you a timeline when that'll happen. But, you know, you alluded to this a little bit, Amy and Lindsay, too, in your comments so far, but there's a difference in when engaging women donors. Expand on that a little bit.
Sure, Kurt. So I think we all can attest to the fact that men and women are very, very different, especially as it comes to how to specifically engage our women donors. So I recently had the opportunity to attend a presentation by Kathleen Lore of Gender Matters, and it was entitled A Guide to Growing Women's Philanthropy. And what I learned from that presentation is that the traditional ways of engaging donors, specifically male donors, is not necessarily going to work with women because women are looking for trust. They're looking for partnership with the charitable organization. So a great example is, you know, engaging a male donor traditionally would be maybe hosting a golf event, right? Where you invite male donors to the golf outing. Afterwards, you sit down and have a luncheon or a dinner, and you really kind of look over the balance sheets from the last year and look over statistics and crunch the numbers. What we're finding is those types of engagement, those are not what's necessarily working for women, because women want to be brought to the table and they want to establish engagement and partnership in ways that's very different. And I know Amy has an example of that.
We are great friends. Barnabas is great friends with Russell James, and we used a lot of his material. And I remember when I first went through the Russell James, one of his first books, he used an example, a university, I believe it was a university sent out, I believe it was Buckslips for charitable gift annuities. And the first round of Buckslips that they sent to women had a picture of the stadium on the Buckslip. Crickets. No one responded. So they changed it to pictures of classrooms and children and so forth. And they had an overwhelming response from women. So what they learned is you have to look at that audience. You have to look at the women audience and design your materials accordingly. It does make a difference. What works with men may not work for women. So you have to think about how are we marketing? How are we marketing ourselves to women?
And I think too, Amy, just to expound on that, you know, once you're marketing directly to women and engaging them directly, you're creating that trust. You're creating that connection with them, which in turn establishes that partnership. And what we found is that when women feel that connection and feel that partnership with the charitable organization, they tend to give more. And they also tend to give to a broader array of charities, not just to one single charity. So if you know a woman donor out in the community that might be giving to one charity, don't necessarily count them out, because if you can establish that trust and connection and partnership with them, they are going to want to give to your charity as well.
When I first joined Barnabas, and I had left 17 years of private practice, so my private practice was meeting with a lot of couples and helping them with their estate planning. So then I moved over to Barnabas and met with a lot of couples and talked to them about their charitable goals. And there were often times in those meetings, I met with men and women, and I thought to myself, boy, I find the women are not as charitable as the men. That was my overall vibe. But then when we started doing Planning for Peace of Mind, we always enlisted a woman speaker as kind of our kickoff speaker, someone who had maybe been through a loss. Maybe her husband had passed away. And so she was speaking really from the heart, really from knowing where she'd been, where, and she had walked the road, right? So one of our speakers said to me before we started the event, she said, "When my husband died, I didn't know if I could afford a blouse or a car." And it struck me like a load of bricks. Women, there are so many women in this pre-boomer, boomer group that don't understand their financial picture. So how can we as charities build their trust in our charitable goals and so forth, if they don't understand their finances and they don't understand their estate plans? So again, that's what I think we do really well at Barnabas, is help them get their arms around their plans and their finances. But if your women donors don't have their arms around those things, it's hard for them to build trust in your organization and buy into those goals.
So very true, Amy. And I know over the years, we've made it a point as an organization that when we have the husband pass away, we purposely reach out to the surviving, the spouse, the wife, to at a point in time thereafter to make sure that they're aware of their plan, and we'll spend the extra time to sit down with them and review the existing plan that they have so that they, you know, are educated about it. And then of course we have the development of P for POM, as we call it, which has been amazing. And I recall, Jim, too, we were just counseling another member charity recently. We were talking about this very issue. And the struggle, of course, for their question was, and this is a struggle for all of you, quite honestly, as development officers to work through. So many of you do have a relationship with one party of a couple. You need to work really hard to connect with both parties of the couple so that the both parties are attached to your ministry, not just one or the other. And most specifically, the wife. So if you have relationships out there that are crucial to your organization, that are major donors, mid-level donors, or the like, and you really only know the husband, find a way to get to know the wife, because you want to be connected to her as well, not just have the relationship with her husband. As we see from the stats that Lindsay showed us, that the average age of widowhood is 59 years old. Quite honestly, that scares me a little bit, as I'm 51. but you see the importance in this, and making sure you are having a connection with the entire family, not just with one or two of the individuals of the couple.
It's even little things. Like when I go into a donor meeting, I make certain I give my business card to both the husband and the wife. Make certain they both have your card.
Absolutely. Great point. So on that note, you know, how do our member organizations really engage their women donors effectively? You know, what suggestions do you have for our member organizations?
Yeah, so Kurt, that's really the big question, I think, of why we're here. You know, Amy and I really had the chance to sit down and sort of share our collective wisdom of, you know, working with women clients and donors for so many years. And so Amy and I came up with essentially the three I's. And those are what you see here on the screen, which are to identify, to inform, and to involve women. And we're just going to kind of break this down and start with that first bullet point, which is to identify. So what that means is you are going to, as a charitable organization, look across your donor base and really start to identify those specific women donors based on their passions and their goals that may or may not match your organization. So the goal here is to identify specific women donors who are sharing, you know, those dreams, those desires, those passion and goals that are really going to, in essence, match the charity and allow them the opportunity to give, to really enhance those passions and goals. And Amy and I both actually have a real collective experience regarding this.
This is funny. When we were working on this presentation, Lindsay was telling me about, there's a charity that we are each passionate about. And she was telling me that they tapped her shoulder recently to work on a project. And you always know when someone asks you to work on it, they're hoping that you will ultimately write a check. And I thought to myself, this is fascinating to me because I have worked with this charity, have loved this charity for years and years and years, and have an entire collection of women that have worked on and worked with this charity, worked on this project in the past, probably 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And this charity didn't tap any of us. Now, all of us in my group of friends, we're all in that pre-boomer boomer group. We all have kids that have now graduated from college. So we're all in that group that has disposable income, if you will. And we're all kind of doing that, you know, second to the last estate planning revision. It would have been so wise for this organization to go through their donor list and look at all of us, because all of us would have jumped on board. So it just really, as Lindsay mentioned, really brings home the importance of going through your donor list, especially when you have a new campaign or something, to say, you know what, look at all these women who identified with this in the past. Let's break them down by age group and let's break them down by interest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So Kurt, you know, that gets now back to our second bullet point, which is to inform. And I think this is one of the most important parts to this. Women want information, right? They want to know what's going on. Women want to be informed about your organization. They want to be informed about your charitable campaign. They want to have that knowledge. So they want you to reach out to them. They want to know specifically what's going on, and then most importantly, how they can help. And I think by doing that, by really reaching out, identifying these women donors, providing them the information that they need, what that is going to do is really build that trust and confidence that women are looking for with the organization. And then in turn, once we have the trust and confidence, they have the information, it's going to establish that key partnership, because the partnership is really what's so important allow a women donor to want to give and to give very generously.
I work with a Christian school in Norfolk, and every fall they host a legacy luncheon, and they are really good at inviting the right age donors to this luncheon. And what they learned several years ago is, rather than bring all these folks to the luncheon and then throw up a bunch of slides showing this is how we did last year in regard to our numbers and our budget and so forth, they bring the children in and let the children tell the story. And I remember one particular luncheon, they brought in the STEM class, brought in a 3D printer. And they actually did a 3D printing of a project. I will tell you, the women in that luncheon, there was huge buy-in immediately, because that's what women are interested in. At least for that organization, they figured it out. Mm-hmm. And that's really providing that information on behalf of your school, or this particular school, providing the information was key. And that's what they do. And they've learned that. And Lindsay, you had that happen recently for an organization that you're close to also.
So Amy, there is a local school, and this is a great example. They were looking to bring in new playground equipment for the school. And so what they decided to do was really just put out a very general push to their donors and say, hey, you know, would you be interested in donating to this fund to raise money for playground equipment? And unfortunately, the response was not quite what they anticipated. And so they kind of went back to the table and said, okay, how can we do this better? What can we do differently? So what they decided to do instead was to identify key donors, a lot of them women, in their donor base. And they went out to these key donors, identified them and said, hey, you know, would you be interested in donating, helping us raise funds for playground equipment? But more specifically, donor A, would you be willing to purchase the slide? Donor B, would you be willing to buy the monkey bars? Donor C, would you purchase the rock climbing wall? And especially being a lot of these donors were women, these donors were envisioning, oh, this is my, you know, grandchild or my child or my niece or my nephew. I can envision them using the slide that I bought, or, you know, hey, I can think about my son climbing the rock climbing wall or using the monkey bars. And it instilled, it not only identified the right donors and instilled this passion in them to want to give back, and they were able to raise all the funds, all the money they needed just by piecing it out with key donors. So it really got back to those three I's of identifying, informing these donors and bringing them to the table that way.
Right. So what's our last I, Lindsay?
So our last I, and this is really a big one, this is to involve. And I think what we need to know about this word is women really want to get involved. Not only do they want to give their dollars to the charity, but they want to get involved with your charity, whether it be asking them to serve on the board, asking them to be a part of a committee, asking them to volunteer at one of your events or to be part of a campaign, or even just picking up the phone and asking them to pray for your organization. Women want to be involved. And that is so important, because once a woman is involved personally with your organization, there is huge buy-in there. There is huge trust established, confidence in these women. There's connection, there's partnership. They are actively participating. And it's really, this is the key to building that lifelong relationship with them, which in turn is going to lead to great funds donated throughout the years. That's really going to give back to the kingdom.
I'm going to steal a little bit of Kurt's thunder here, because I know I saw the little blurb ahead. On July 13, you're going to have Jack Strong talk to our members. And I know that many of you know Jack. Jack was with Central Wisconsin Christian School. He was with Elam. He was with Reframe. And now we're fortunate to have Jack at Barnabas Foundation. But when I first started at Barnabas Foundation, I came from the legal world, and I didn't really have any real expertise in regard to development. I didn't know what you folks out there, I've never walked in your shoes. And so when I met Jack, I called Jack and I said, can you help me? I need some help. I don't know what you do. I need some training. And so Jack was really gracious and sat down with me, and he said, I remember this specifically, him telling me, when I go into someone's home, when I go to talk to them, I make certain that I have at least a few tools in my toolbox every time I go in. So if I'm going in, I need to have a few ideas of what may resonate with them, what they may connect to. So if you're going in to talk to someone, if you're going in to talk to that widow, if you're going in to talk to the single woman, or the, you know, the woman who's been divorced, make certain you have, you know, two or three projects that she can at least connect with. That's how you're going to get buy-in That's how you're going to get trust. This is what we know at Barnabas Foundation. We know that women are charitable. We know that they are, but they're not going to get there unless they understand their finances and unless they understand their plan. And that's what we help with. That's our wheelhouse. But yours is to build that trust and to build that confidence in your organization. And I think that partnership that we have with you as members, I just think that reaps huge dividends if we bring those two things together. That, at least that's my feeling. I don't know, Kurt, Lindsay, you can add to that.
That's very true. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Absolutely, Amy. I would just echo everything you said and just, you know, really stress, you know, remembering and just thinking about those three I's, right? Identifying the women donors, informing them, make sure that they have knowledge, make sure they know if you have charitable campaigns coming up. You know, get them on the phone, you know, talk to them, ask them for prayer. That's a great way to engage them, making sure that last I, that they're involved. I think doing all three of those things, like you said, Amy, it's establishing that partnership. These women are going to be entrusted to you. They're going to be wanting to give back to your organization. And that's really going to build God's kingdom, right? That's what we're here to do. And that's, where we're going to see them sharing the wealth that God has entrusted to them with your organizations.
Thank you so much, both of you. And just real quick before we close, we've got just a couple more minutes left here. Amy, I just wanted to ask you to touch on this very briefly. We had this one question that came in via email yesterday about, you know, we talked a bit about, you have single women, we've got the couples, the widows, the divorcees, and we have that group of families out there that don't have children, which I know is something that often wears very heavily on women's hearts. You know, they have unique circumstances too, but we were talking about this before we started our broadcast today, and quite honestly, every one of the plans we do is unique. So how would you approach some of that and share some thoughts for our friends out east that asked the question?
You know, we meet so many women, some with children, some without children, and every case is so unique. And we always come into these meetings from a stewardship perspective. What are your stewardship goals? What are your kingdom goals? And then we're able to kind of parse through that and help women with their plan. Once we're able to help them understand their financial picture and their planning picture, then we're able to help them figure out, you know, what is the legacy statement? What's the stewardship statement that you're hoping to make? What's the kingdom impact that you're trying to make? So every case, every woman is different. We approach each one differently, but we're able to help them.
Yeah, and on that note, you know, our role is not just to be the legal counselors to these folks, or I wouldn't say counselors because I know we don't actually draft anyone's final documents, but we're here to help people kind of wrestle with those tough questions. Mm-hmm. We alluded to that a couple months ago when we did our family planning related to family dynamics. You have situations where how much is enough for children? How much do I leave to my nieces or nephews when I have a better relationship with some and not with others, and so forth. So our role in that is to help you wrestle through that. And so in those circumstances, that's what our planners are trying to do and achieve, and just walk with that family, that individual, down that path so that they have a plan that's God honoring and accomplishes their goals and objectives for both their heirs as well as their charitable causes that are near and dear to their heart. You know, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you all realize that these folks are passionate about this. I hope that came through. I hope it also comes through that, you know, women are a powerhouse in philanthropy. And if you're not talking directly to them specifically, you need to start thinking about that and incorporating that in your strategy. As they pointed out, they're going to control a massive amount of wealth already now, as well as in the future. And so you need to be making sure that you're connecting with the full couple or the women that are out there in your donor base. And keep them engaged and passionate for your vision of your ministry. And then when you get them interested in planning, or they perhaps they want to review their plan, or perhaps they just really need to do their first plan, know that your resources are right here. Lindsay and Amy and the rest of the team are here to work with those folks and engage with them to help them find their road path to that blueprint of a plan that will accomplish those goals and objectives. Just a couple last closing announcements. But if you haven't seen our brochure about the September conference, 13, 14, and 15, be sure to check it out. You can find information on it at barnabasfoundation.com/September2022, where you can register as well as get information about the event. 3-day event, boot camp on Tuesday the 13th, proven strategies concepts on Wednesday the 14th, and then two different workshop tracks on Thursday the 15th. All of that will be in person here in Tinley Park, Illinois at the convention center where we used to hold our conference at for many years. And for those of you that are unable to travel or have any restrictions that are perhaps scheduling that won't allow you to travel, both the September 13th and 14th dates will be live streamed so you can watch those events remotely. Amy alluded to July 13th. If you don't know Jack, be sure to tune in on July 13th where we'll be talking with Jack Strong, who's the newest member here at the organization on the member relations team, and how that's actually going to affect my role and Jack's role going forward. And so we're going to be reshuffling some things, and Jack's going to be stepping into a member engagement role, and so we begin to see Jack more often. Also, yesterday we sent out our announcement about our explainer videos are now available, and we quickly got several orders for those. But if you don't know what they are short 60 to 90 second animated videos on various different topics related to planned giving, from giving in your will to non-cash gifts, life income gifts, and so forth. Great little animated videos that can be customized, and then you can throw onto your website or use in other means like email, broadcast, and so forth. Be sure to check out yesterday's email announcement about that. If you have any interest in following through on ordering one of those, feel free to reach out to Linnell Dykstra at our office here. And then lastly, just a quick note to clarify some confusion in the past. We do monthly Zoom sessions throughout the year. Most of these are member only kind of invites like today. Once a quarter, we will do a event that's more donor focused. And then as part of that, we will include with our announcement on that event, marketing materials that you can use to invite donors to that broadcast. And those are usually built around being very specific donor oriented types of topics versus today, which is much more of a development team or marketing team kind of focus. So just to clear up any confusion that existed on that matter. Amy and Lindsay, again, thank you so much for your insights today. Today was an absolutely great session. Appreciate you putting the time and effort in that you did for today. And again, just thank you so much for participating. And for all those that are watching, be blessed. We have a pleasure to be in service with you. And God bless and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been a Members Only broadcast brought to you by Barnabas Foundation. Learn more about the variety of resources, tools, and training available to you by logging into the Member Center at www.barnabasfoundation.com.